You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Can only come from you. Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today. And hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it is not, and it has to be done, you will get it done. That's right, you will, and you'll do it safely. That's why we love and respect you, because you don't procrastinate. You get it done, and we need that. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. In the drop-down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. But, of course, you can do the shortcut. That's right. You can shortcut by putting in Baba Oshi, BabaOshi.net, BabaOshi.net, and there will be programs that are dated and titled and pretty much up to date. Thanks to my good brother, Brother Kwaku. Appreciate you. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays, Black Therapy Central, with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Ataki Kamban from 8 to 9. And then from 9 to 10, every first and third Mondays, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. Every Tuesday evening from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9 on Wednesdays. From 8 to 9, the Black Farmers Report. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We by Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Brothers and sisters, you can get everything you need from American African-owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. That's right. And, of course, I'm going to talk about, I did go to the new Black Wall Street Market this weekend. Saw my good brother, Brother Sajifo. Yes, yeah, Saj, you know, his booth is looking good. There's some other jewelers there, too. But all kind of stuff. And we'll talk about that in a minute. This is also part of We Buy Black. And so that's a place where you can go buy black. And that's what we always must do. We Buy Black. Brothers, go to WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bamani Taimba is leaving this Thursday. That's right, the 18th. He's going to Tanzania. He sent me a good number of things. I appreciate that, brother, so much. And he'll be on the program when he gets back from Tanzania to talk about his tour to Tanzania with about 15 brothers and sisters. And that is the 18th, which is Thursday, to the 29th. And then December 24th, next month, December 24th through January 5th, 2022, going to Ghana. And then April 1st to April 11th, Senegal and Gambia. And then, once again, from May 24th to June 5th, to Ghana. Experience a vibrant Africa with a mix of roots, culture, paradise, nightlife, shopping, networking, business, and investment opportunities. This tour packages include, that's right,
certified English speaking tour guides, round trip flights from America to Africa, transportation and tours throughout Africa, daily exercise and meditation sessions, daily breakfast and gourmet dinner, naming ceremonies and ancestral celebrations, hotel accommodations, double occupancy, repatriation and investment conference, and then, of course, all those things are included. And you can be a part of a trip of a lifetime. Africa for the Africans. By good brother Bomani Tayemba. Yeah. Brothers and sisters, if you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. See for yourself. You can do that. You can see for yourself. Also, too, Brother Bomani sent me the whole outline on WhatsApp for, the whole thing. I got it all right here, brothers and sisters. That's right. The Tanzania tour, as well as other tours. This is the whole outline of the itineraries and everything for Africa for the Africans. So, press releases, information, all kinds of good stuff. I appreciate that brother so much and truly wish them well, him and all the 14 brothers and sisters who are going on their trip to Tanzania. Of course, you know, I said way back when that I wanted to go, that I was going to go. But unfortunately, I fell ill and I had some respiratory issues. And of course, going to Tanzania, where Mount Kilimanjaro is probably not the thing to do at this time, you know, higher elevations and so forth, because they show you the itinerary, what you're going to be doing. Man, it's beautiful. Yeah, I tell you. So anyway, let's continue. Yeah, Habesha Incorporated. Habesha stands for helping Africans by establishing schools at home and abroad. Habesha Incorporated, and they have so many good programs, you know. They have Habesha Works, Black Tar Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and the Urban Green Jobs. And, of course, they got the Kashi Project that is happening on the continent in Ghana as we speak, the Kashi Project. So go to HabeshaIncorporated.org, HabeshaIncorporated.org. The Ledge Group, Ledge stands for the Land for the Environmental Development for Group Economics. And, of course, they deal with the four areas of human existence: food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects on 6 different countries in Africa, over 172 employed and over 260 members. Once again, if you are a member of the Ledge Group, you have the possibility of purchasing land, $250 an acre of land in Tanzania. That's right, in Tanzania. I know they call it Tanzania, but it's the people call it, and then they pronounce it Tanzania. And you have the opportunity to go, just like Brother Bomani is taking these brothers and sisters this Thursday to Tanzania. Wish them all the best and hope they enjoy themselves. I know that they will. It's going to be a great program. Abibiatumi.com, Abibiatumi.com. Brothers and sisters, go to Abibiatumi and make it your favorite. Go to Abibiatumi and see all the things they have to offer, the shopping, you name it. They have so much to offer, the programs, the groups, the news feeds. Become a member of the events that are happening, shop. You know, they have classes. You know, I promote that we should speak an African language. They offer a con. They even offer Medu Netcher. Not speak Medu Netcher, but you can read Medu Netcher. But they also offer a Wolof and, of course, Kiswahili, which I say that we should all learn to speak. Abibiatumi.com. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta, Georgia. Wadada's, cross street from Soul Vegetarian, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which is open on Fridays and Saturdays from 1 to 7. And their classes are still happening online on Zoom with Baba Olutunji. And Wadada's serving delicious smoothies and health drinks and fruit and wraps and so forth. Give Wadada's a call at 404-444-1635. That's 404-444-1635. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Give Mama Nia a call. If you're looking for a book, she may not have it, but believe me, she'll get it. But more than likely, she may have it, believe me. 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. She has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, gift certificates, T-shirts, figurines, oh, so much. At the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia with a good brother Gazim there, Jamu. Done great work with the Black Dot Cultural Center. Looks fantastic. Give him a call or stop in if you that way at 6984 Main Street in Lithonia. But give him a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. There is light in the Black Dot. Afroletics. Afroletics. He has a shop in the Black Dot Cultural Center. That's the brother that has the African Centered Sportswear. You know, the Rebels, the Dogon Seed, Star Seed, and the Moors, the Omex, you name it. Marcus Garvey shirts, the Zulus. That's right. He has a shop located in the new Black Wall Street Market in Stonecrest. We're going to talk about in a minute. Yep. Homeland Village. Homeland Village is open from Tuesday to Sunday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. From Tuesday to Sunday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Located 2910 Napier Avenue in Macon, Georgia. Give Brother Abijah a call at 478-256-1166. That's 478-256-1166. I mean, he has whatever you may need. His store is just packed. It's filled to the brim with all kinds of good stuff. He even has a restaurant, a vegan restaurant in there. But he sells all kinds of products, holistic stuff, beauty products, oils, incense, CDs, DVDs, literature, jewelry, Pan-African furniture, clothing, you name it. That's the Homeland Village in Macon, Georgia. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Us Lifting Us, every Thursday night, the Thursday night broadcast, every Thursday night at 9 p.m. from 9 to 10. Go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU, blogtalkradio.com/ULU. You can also call to listen or call to give questions, comments, or concerns at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Sun Goddess Sense. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. For more information, please contact my good sister, Shelly Amonset, at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop. And, of course, my good sister, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia in Haiti. She's in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti and just doing great work in the mountain areas with our children particularly. And that's Sanjay, SONJAY-HAYITI.org. Sanjay-HAYITI. She, check it out, go online and see what she's doing with the children in education, healthcare, sustainable agriculture, and entrepreneurship. She's doing great work and deserves to be supported. Akaban Institute. Abba Baruti and Mama Ya are doing great work with our children. And truly, as everything that I announce here, it all deserves to be supported. And I know we can't support them all. I can't. I do support many, and I try. you know, because that's what it takes. It takes us to make it happen. Many of the things that I'm talking about here will not get any foundation money, any government money, any, you know, no, any grants. It is depending upon us, of us who are like-minded, who understand how important it is to support each other. So Ackerman Institute, make your check of money order out to Ackerman Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. And, of course, you can use PayPal and Cash App. Let's just say you want to use Cash App. Put in the dollar sign and YAH, the dollar sign YAH, Y-A-A-M, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and make your donations, and you can do it monthly. Also, too, Ackerman House, brothers and sisters, Ackerman House. Or for PayPal, just put paypal.me/Ackerman Village for PayPal. AckermanHouse.com, AckermanHouse.com for the many books that Baba Baruti has, you know? Yep. So. Yeah, let's do that. Let's go to the Inye Sesim. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. And of course, today, yesterday, November 14th, Sunday, November 14th, skills demands vigilance. It is him who is free of laziness that it comes. All works demand insight. The one who is effective is he who applies himself. Zinral said, ignorance, incompetence, laziness, and lack of accountability are the bane of any front line. Warriors should have no tolerance for any of them or any other qualities which dilute and cripple our nation-building efforts. This must be checked at the door even for those new to the front line, because the time for negotiating with any habits which slow or in any way reduce the effectiveness of what is being done to empower our Sankofian movement is gone. We are already too far behind to justify the tolerance of anything which hinders a centered progression away from Urugu and toward African sovereignty. And while we know that the point of this proverb applies to men and women equally, the Kikuyu adage that men act promptly is most apropos within this statement. Promptness in the face of a full destruction whose time has eclipsed the horizon requires the courage given through knowing, resilience gained through the practice of competence, the active determination inbred within diligence, and the kind of selfless, altruistic accountability found only among those who possess good character. Fortitude in the application of truth is the way of the warrior. Within this, there is no room for mortal, spiritual, intellectual, or physical weakness. Affirm, I meticulously, diligently apply myself to effective, immediate ends. Affirm, I meticulously and diligently apply myself to effective, immediate ends. November 15th. They destabilize us, flesh-eating madmen callously controlling crazy, venomous canine dog attacks, viciously biting and chewing broken black skin, saliva dripping doom, violating our visions, poisoning our standing position, murdering bruised masses, shooting spirited voices. Robin Asantewa. Robin Asantewa. Most of us are able to grasp the concept of murder when it comes to Urugu. We are just unable to understand the magnitude of, the meaning of, the mind bending behind hundreds of millions when it comes to Urugu's murdering us. me say that again. The mind hindering behind hundreds of millions when it comes to Urugu murdering us. Such numbers are beyond our comprehensive threshold or our ability to feel without necessarily becoming righteously enraged and actually doing something corrective. This awakening we fear because we remain slaves.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Let me say this again. This awakening we fear because we remain slaves to Urugu's way. Because we know Urugu and its wanton murderous record. And for this reason, we hide from our ancestors deep in the recesses of Urugu's insanity. That is deep. Affirm, I hear the cries of my ancestors. I do. Affirm, I hear the cries of my ancestors. Brothers and sisters, the Inye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. Yeah. History is a light that illuminates the past and a key that unlocks the door to the future. A quote from my dear friend, Brother Renoko Rishidi. He was an illuminator of light on our history. He truly was. Here's another quote. It's not, I heard him say it in the Hidden Color series. I think it's Mr. Dr. Thurman, I believe. I'm not sure. He gives the quote, and it is not his, but he gets credit. But he says, what you do for yourself depends upon what you think of yourself. And what you think of yourself depends upon what you know of yourself. And what you know of yourself depends upon what you have been told. And of course, the question is, who's doing the telling? Who's been doing the telling? Whose narrative do many of us, even at this moment, at this day, still believe? Your philosophy determines your thought pattern. Your thought pattern determines your attitude. And your attitude determines your behavior pattern. And your behavior pattern determines your actions. It begins with what you think, your philosophy, and it ends with what you do, your actions. So if your philosophy, and believe me, it's sad because many people believe this, that we ain't nothing. I just heard the other day, niggas ain't shit. I hate it. I hate the word. I hate the idea that we ain't about nothing. Our women say it about us as men. Our men say it about our sisters. It begins with what you think and it ends with what you do. Brother, we need to work on who we are. So then what we think and what we do will be a mode of change. We must not be the people who walked but left no footprints, who talked but had nothing meaningful to say, who labored but built nothing for themselves. And so we lay at your feet the builder's spade and shovel, the mason's troll and square, Africa's books of wisdom. Go now and build for eternity. Brother Lester Velt Middleton, once again, you can go to YouTube and put in Lester Velt Middleton. Lester Velt Middleton interviewed the great scholars of our people, the warrior scholars of our people. In fact, he was a builder. Before he made his transition, he was building his home in North Carolina, literally. Lester Velt Middleton. Brothers and sisters, please do that. Yeah. nothing meaningful to say. Yeah, today we're going to talk about there's always something to talk about. You know that. There's always something that we can discuss. Let me just talk very briefly about the New Black Wall Street. I did go to the soft opening this weekend, and the grand opening will be next week, Friday. Now, there's still a lot of work that is being done. They don't have kiosks. They have stores, and they have streets named after, like, A.G. Gaston. Of course, A.G. Gaston was the man, and he helped many of us who had that spirit of entrepreneurship, doing for self and working with us, to move to Tulsa, Oklahoma. See, Tulsa, Oklahoma had experienced wealth because of oil. And many of our people had land because of the Trail of Tears. See, the European didn't know that when he marched us out of the Southeast, particularly out of the Florida, along the Trail of Tears into Oklahoma, that there was going to be that kind of boom, you know, and that some of us became rich. And we built Black Wall Street, where we had stores and theaters and shops, everything you need. Everything. All of it destroyed by Europeans, by Urugu. All of it. Today, I was in Tulsa for the commemoration of the massacre of our people and the destruction of Black Wall Street in June of this year, June 2021, because it happened in June 1921, 100 years. And all that's left was one block of restaurant and store to sell t-shirts, a few other stores. At the end of that block is a museum that is being built. Some have issue because, you know, there's still some descendants and, of course, survivors. There's like 4 or 5 survivors. 3 of the survivors were in the parade. Not a parade, excuse me. In the in the procession that started near Greenwood and marched all the way down into where the museum and where the center is, and of course the church that still stands, the expressway and the wall that was built there, and of course on the other side of that expressway and wall is the one block that's left. Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. That's right, the Gap Band. G-A-P, Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. They're from Tulsa. Gap Band, Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. Yeah. Yeah. So the New Black Wall Street Market is located in Stonecrest. The New Black Wall Street Market, located in Stonecrest, Georgia, is a destination for family fun, entertainment, retail, gourmet, grocery shopping, and fine dining, set among beautiful, created common spaces. So what he means by beautifully created, these little stores that are next to each other, and each is, you can, you know, make it uniquely your own through how you want to decorate it. And on the floor, you can put carpet or you can put tile and make it different, you know. And there are over 100 shops and restaurants located inside this new and exciting development. An extension of the Allen Enterprise, the Allen Entrepreneurial Institute. The New Black Wall Street Market shares its mission to increase the size and number I don't like this word, but minority and women-owned businesses throughout the United States and globally. This new retail experience fosters operational excellence in areas such as product offerings, systems utilization, presentation, customer service, training and acceleration, marketing, advertising, and online sales support, and some of the featured available to the merchandise inside the market. It is really nice, brothers and sisters. It really is. They're going to have a nightclub there, a jazz nightclub inside of the market. Restaurants, I mean, it is still evolving. And like I said, I want to thank my good brother, Sajafo, for showing me around and explaining things. And also, I see my other brothers and sisters from Milwaukee with a CBD. They're in there. And like I said, the brother with Athletics is in there. He has a shop in there. Shop looking good, you know. So if you're in the Atlanta area, and like I said, next week Friday, will be the grand opening. Good Friday. That's not Good Friday, Oshi. Black Friday. You know, that's another story too. You know we ought to do a piece on that, and that's origin, that's bull. But yeah, that day after Thanksgiving, so it'll be open and have that grand opening. And so I'm hoping, brothers and sisters, instead of going to the Stonecrest Mall, that's right, the Stonecrest Mall, that you'll take the opportunity to go to the new Black Wall Street Market for your shopping, dining, and whatever else you want to do, okay? Right on. The new Stonecrest Mall. I'm going to talk today about, you know, there's always that thing about, you know, is, were the ancient Kemetic people African? And I know. For those of us, the answer has been solved, and there is no doubt about that. We know that. But to some, it is still an issue. You know, to some, it's still an issue. And so we want to make sure that we deal with the facts. You know, we deal with the facts. There we go. Fact checked. Egyptian statues' noses not broken off because they resemble black faces. Well, given that, headline, fact checked, statues not broken off because they resemble black faces, to some degree, many of the statues were defaced during the reigns of some of the ancient Kemetic people. Yes, they were. But more contemporary, you know, I know that when I was in Egypt, one of our tour guides was a student of the Antiquities Department, which is under the leadership at that time of the museum, but Dr. Owas. And you probably, if you've seen National Geographic, Learning Channel, Discovery Channel on Ancient Egypt, they always have Dr. Owas. Now, personally, I don't like Dr. Owas, because Dr. Owas espouses that ancient Kemetic with some kind of mixed race group. It was not African. It was not black. That's him. And so, you know, he continues to promote that. I'm not sure if he continues to promote that at this time, but I believe that he does, you know. And so, to hell with Dr. Owas. But so she says, and this is, I guess, one of the things that they push or promote, that through erosion took off some of the noses. Now, since I've been promoting the documentary, and I hope that you I have opportunity to check out the documentary. Great. On YouTube. Go to YouTube and put in Great Pyramid. If you just put in Great Pyramid, it'll come up. But Great Pyramid K 2019. Great Pyramid K 2019. Of course, this documentary will tell you and show you. And believe me, there are many skeptics. There are many people who are now at this very moment still saying, no, the pyramids were not built the way they say they were back in the ancient times with human beings lifting and pulling. And I mean, it couldn't have been. It could not have happened physically. It couldn't have happened. They come to that realization. I mean, when I used to talk to the young people about ancient Kemet and saying, you know, this is how it happened, you know, even in the back of my mind, saying that we would sail when the water levels rose, that we would sail, you know, upriver, which is going south because the Nile River, longest river in the world, flows from south to north. So we're going to go upriver. Because down would be going north. So we'd sail upriver, and then we would try our best to quarry out these stones. And apparently we must have made them perfect coming right out the quarry, just blocked them, bam, 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 and then dragged them to the river's edge, put them on a barge, and then sailed them, you know, downriver going north. And then dragged them off from there, and then dragged them and put them in place and so forth. Now we come to understand that that was very difficult. That would have been extremely difficult to do, you know. And it didn't happen that way. Now we understand that, yes, during the three seasons that happens in ancient Kemet, the inundation, the flooding season, was because they needed water to mix with the limestone and then pour into a mold those huge blocks that hardened into the tons that they became. Some of those blocks, one ton, of course, as we know, is 2,000 pounds. Some of those blocks are 2, 3, 4 tons. That's 8,000 pounds. There wouldn't have been a barge nowhere near possible that could have sustained itself by putting something that heavy. It would have sunk. Let's be real. And I know that what we did, we said it that way, and because we wanted to hide how we did it. Because those who would understand it and know how we did it, one of us would want to steal it, would kill us for it. And the only people possible who could work in that time were us, African people, melanated people, dark-skinned people. There were no Arabs. There were no Atlanteans. There were no Caucasians. There were no aliens. They were Africans. They were dark-skinned people. And at the time of ancient Kemet, because those statues were poured, they would make a mold of the face of the person and pour it with different elements, granite. I was watching a piece, and they were showing all these granite bowls and jars and so forth, perfect. There couldn't have been somebody just carving those out like that. No. They were perfect. Because they were poured. Well, how, Brother Oshie, how can you pour granite? Because we developed the solar lens. Just like when you put a magnifying glass, you got a magnifying glass, and you just want to be curious maybe to put a magnifying glass into the light of the sun and then put it back and forth to on the back of your hand till it gets to be right there, that spot, and then in seconds, it'll burn you. Imagine a big magnifying glass and tilted perfectly where it's so hot that it melts, that it liquefies granite. And then you pour, brothers and sisters, I'm just being real. You got to think logically. When you look at some of the tombs and you see a granite sarcophagus, just perfect, rectangle, perfect, the edges, perfect. There's only one way that could have happened perfectly, is that it was poured. Because they had copper tools. They didn't have any tools of even today. Their chisels and hammer. No, brothers and sisters, it could not have happened that way. But it happened that way if it was poured, just like the limestone. The dark limestone on the inner and the white limestone for the outer casing. Get the documentary, brothers and sisters. Be patient. Now, I admit that I do fast forward the part of the documentary which shows that we could have traveled on the Atlantic. You know, Thor Heyerdahl proved that that could happen. So they have these two Frenchmen and they're talking and so forth. And I fast forward that. But right after that, don't fast forward too much, because right after that, they talk about us leaving out of Kemet and bringing our knowledge to where we went. Being able to reestablish that and do the kind of work wherever we went that we had done in Kemet. Pi, the royal number, the cubit, all of these things were done by us long before there was a Pythagoras and the Pythagorean theory. Us, Africans. Just like the Caucasian who was Albanian, who lives in France, who produced the documentary, said, we must give the Egyptians what the Egyptians have done. We must give them their due. We must give them their credit. Just like they said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar. Render unto to the Kemetic people what is for then done by the Kemetic people. But, yes, Kemetic people chop noses off, deface people. Some of them did it because they disliked the previous rulers. They felt that their statues, so I don't want them to breathe. So, I'm serious. So I chopped the noses off or the eyes out. I don't want them to see. I don't want them to hear. So. Okay, come on now. Act right. I tell you. Okay, here we go. Thank you. Europeans would break off noses from Kemetic monuments because they resemble African people. Let me just say to you, even though they said no, that didn't happen, but to some degree, yes, it did. On September 9th, the Facebook page African Diaspora posted a picture of a Kemetic monuments, including the Sphinx, with the noses broke off. At the top, it stated, when the Europeans and the Greeks particularly went to Kemet, they were in shock that these monuments had African faces. The shape of the noses gave it away. So they removed the noses. Today, they constantly tell us on the Tell Lie vision that ancient Kemetic people were Caucasian or Arab. Just be true, and they do. I've said this many, many times. If you can still watch National Geographic, the Learning Channel, Discovery Channel, PBS, if they're talking about ancient Kemet, like I just told you about Dr. Awas, and his firm belief, too, that these people were not African. So, no, to this very day, they still present them as if they were other than African. And nothing could be furthest from the truth. The Post received about 2,900 shares, more than 500 comments, and around 3,000 likes and reactions. Some comments claim history had been whitewashed. Yes, it has. A few who shared the Facebook post said they learned in schools that erosion ruined the monuments, not that they were broken. No, erosion did not ruin the monuments. I told you that's what the tour guide, the young lady who was a student of Dr. Owa, said, no. Because, I mean, to me, if erosion, why would erosion just take the nose off? It couldn't, the erosion just couldn't be happening washing away the nose. No, it would have to wash away the side of a face because the wind was constantly in that direction. The side of the face, the nose, the ears, and everything, you know, if that's the case. One comment said that Europeans deliberately destroyed a defining feature. The Facebook page did not return a request for additional information. You know. Statues displayed at the Brooklyn Museum of Kemetic Art Galleries sit noseless. And the curator, Edward Blydberg, search for the reason, according to an article by Julia Floor for artistry.net, a database of modern and historical artwork along with art event coverage. In the article, Blydberg said the damage was perceivable after researching differences between accidental and deliberate breakage patterns. Ancient Kemetic believed a human soul could occupy a sculpture reserved for that person. And Blackbird said the vandalism deactivated an image's strength. So, if I had issue, just like I'm right now, I'm thinking of Thutmose III, who had issue with Queen Hatshepsut and tried to erase her memory, her imagery, chiseled off the face of a couple of reliefs, you know. So, if they wanted to get rid of or deface, and that's what they would do, the statue will hold a certain power in Kemet, Blydberg said in the article. He said the statues represent the interaction between humans and the supernatural. Come on now. All right. A common cultural belief in ancient Kemet was that once a body part on the monument is damaged, it cannot perform its purpose anymore. Therefore, a broken nose caused the spirit to stop breathing, he said. The exhibit's striking power, iconolism in ancient Kemet, for Pulitzer Arts Foundation curator Blydberg, stated in its catalog that it divulges into the target destruction driven by political and religious motivations. Rulers benefited from the defacement, which helped them by rewriting history to their advantage. However, the exhibit's catalogs make no mention of race as a motivating factor for defacement. At that time, though, there was no issue of race. In fact, even during the Greeks, the Greeks idolized us. There was no issue. The issue of race came about after the awakening of Europeans following the Dark Ages. That's when the issue of race, And that's where the formation of race became an issue. Rulers benefited from the defacement, which helped them by rewriting history to their advantage. However, the exhibit's catalog makes no mention of race as a motivating factor for defacement. In this article published by Life Science, curator Adelia Oppenheimer from the Department of Kemetic Art and the Metropolitan Museum of Art also said the statues were believed to have a sort of life form, and to deactivate it, people would smash off the nose. So now it's going to be deactivated. Oppenheimer says antagonists like robbers would deface the statues because they believed that they had powers to harm intruders. The article also did not mention race. Well, of course, you know, they have statues that have been defaced here, particularly in the number of years of the statues that were put up by the Confederacy to intimidate and strike fear 30, 40 years after the so-called Civil War, 30, 40 years after, with the express intent of intimidating and to maintaining the right of Caucasians to be who and what they are, you know. So they had all these statues of these generals and so forth to strike fear and intimidation into us and make us more docile and not wanting to vote and not wanting to move off the segregated areas that they placed us into, not wanting us to go to school, you know. Experts on Kemetic statues acknowledge noses were broken off for political and religious reasons, but they do not mention race or culture playing a part. Therefore, we found the Facebook claims are false. The research does not support the noses being broken off because they resemble black faces. I disagree to some extent. Let me say that. I disagree to some extent because some of them were broken off, particularly during Arab conquest. And then later, European conquest of African artifacts. Because how could I enslave a people when I'm seeing and say they were less than human? Listen now. How could I say that these people were less than human or not even human and had no culture and couldn't do anything? Did you not hear that the Europeans said that the civilization of Great Zimbabwe, it's either some Europeans that came there previously or even an invasion or a space invasion, because they did not want to give Africans any credit, any acknowledgement. So, yes, there is defacement. There is some reasons to do what they have done, especially in the last 300, 400 years, 500 years. Of ancient times, no. No. But recently, most definitely. Most definitely. The research does not support. Okay. You know, I hate when this thing jumps like that. I do. I really do. I hate when that happens. The research does not support the noses broken off because they resemble blackface. Instead, the research shows the statues were defaced to deactivate the life form believed to be within them. So, yeah. And there's some other supporting article. I have another article that I'm going to read. How Nefertiti became a powerful symbol in contemporary art. We're going to talk about Nefertiti. And when we come back from the break, that's right, we're going to take a break as we always do around this time. That's right, we're going to take a break. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're going to take a break and you'll be right back with us, okay?
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Well, once again, brothers and sisters, welcome back to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network. That was Down to the Bone, Brooklyn Heights. And once again, our lineup for this evening is Black Therapy Central from 8 to 9, from 8 to 9 p.m. All times I'm going to give, of course, are Eastern times. With Dr. Mawia Cambon and her daughter, Taki Cambon. And then from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. And then on Tuesdays, the Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. And then on Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9 on Wednesdays, from 8 to 9. And then if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then, of course, on Sunday, once again, at 7 p.m., it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And a number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Today we're talking about the Europeans co-opting of African imagery, you know, and their imagery of antiquity. Now, to the first piece I read and talked about, I give some credit, you know, because I've read that before, researched that yes, some of the people did deface statues and imagery, medunature or hieroglyphs, you know, they did, out of revenge, out of trying to make the previous person or that person that you're facing ineffective and deactivating them by cutting off their nose or ears or eyes or just trying to erase their face and trying to erase their memory, their imagery. The iconoclasm. Yep. Since its discovery in the early 20th century, the bust of Nefertiti, now understand there's Nefertiti and there's Nefertari. Nefertari is the wife of Ramesses, who allegedly was in love with Moses. That's Nefertari. She was in love with Moses, but was the wife of Ramesses the second, of course. And Ramesses the second is probably the most talked about. Well, he have to, because he built on a grand scale. When you go down to Abu Simbel in Aswan, when you travel down south where the dam is, the Aswan High Dam, and where they created Lake Nasser. In fact, Abu Simbel was moved from where it was to where it is because of the creation of the lake, and it destroyed a lot of stuff and displaced a number of people, particularly the Nubians, because the south of Kemet is Nubia. And Nubians and Kemetic people are the same people. They're cousins. They're the same people. But of course, the way the Europeans want to, and the Arabs want to write the history, that they're different people. No. But it's already been proven that they are not. But Nefertiti, and the bust of Nefertiti, she was married to Akhenaten. She was married to Akhenaten in the 18th dynasty. The bust of Nefertiti, a work of limestone and stucco, crafted by the sculptor Thutmosis around 1345 before the Christian era, 1,345 years before the Christian era, the Jesus Christ era, has cemented the ancient Kemetic queen's relevance as a global pop culture icon, Nefertiti of the infamous sculpture dons her signature crown, an extravagant royal blue headdress with a golden diadem band and elaborate designs, which suggests a powerful embellished by an elegant artistic and aesthetic. Beneath it, her face symmetrically poised and the objective in its beauty because she had European features. She was found in Germany. They proved that that bust of Nefertiti is a fake. Okay? It was not created. That bust was not sculptured by Tutmosis 1,345 years ago. No. That bust was found in Germany. Europeans have always tried to come up with ways to co-opt things and steal things. I do not trust anything. Let me repeat. I do not trust anything that Europeans bring or present. I don't. So I could give less than a rat's ass. The Nefertiti of the infamous sculpture dons her signature. Okay, beneath it, her face, symmetry posed, okay, is a reminder of the allure that has made her bust of Nefertiti one of the world's most enduring artworks. No, it is not. I mean, it is because they made it such. There's so many. In fact, we had one in our home. Didn't know who the hell it was. All we knew is that it was supposed to be an ancient work of art. We had it right on the table in the middle of the dining room. My mother, you know. And once again, the bust, if you look at it, the bust, she looks like a Caucasian woman. Her features, her nose, her cheeks, her small chin. A testament to her staying power in popular culture, Nefertiti's likeness continues to be reimagined by contemporary artists around the world. Through their adaptation and homages, these artists work bridge the gap between antiquity and modernity. Yet the sculpture is also the subject of heated debate. The significance of Nefertiti's gender and questions surrounding her racial identity have forged schisms in her modern cultural appeal. Over the past few decades, German, Egyptian, and American artists in particular have pushed matters of race and gender to the forefront of the discourse surrounding Nefertiti, calling on us to consider what it means to co-opt, distort, and reimagine the image of an African queen to whom many feel entitled. There's the picture of Nefertiti with Akhenaten and the son Aten, which was the deity that he wanted to, one god to pray to, and their children, you know, around them. Akhenaten, or who was Amenhotep III and changed his name to Akhenaten and the god Aten and Nefertiti. The German Oriental Company uncovered the bust of Nefertiti on an expedition in Armenia in 1912. A sponsor of the excavation lent the sculpture to the Neues Museum in Berlin in 1913. Where it has been housed ever since. Germany's claim to the ancient artwork has been contested by the Egyptian authorities and activists likewise. I mean, to me, they can keep that. They can keep it because it ain't real. Wherein this geopolitical landscape, a number of German artists has explicitly engaged with Nefertiti in their artwork as a means of exploring ideas about identity and ownership. In an untitled 2012 work by Issa Guerin, the first in the Nefertiti series, 2012 to 2018, Nefertiti appears, has never seen her. Seven busts of the Queen sit on individual white podiums, the first of which is cinched by a hot red corset as if to implicate a restrained body. Nefertiti dons a different design of, you know, of glasses or some other reading, and others are stunning, smuggling the difference between mannequin and bust. And this is bull. Because it is not true. Nefertiti's glamour and self-possession as if to suggest that she is a commercial icon as she is a historical one. Well, she is historical. She is truly historical. The bust is not. She is, because she truly lived. In his 2017 bronze work, Quantum Nefertiti, German sculptor Julian von Herrien presents a monarch as unburdened by time or corporal form. Miss Andres' sculpture adheres to Nefertiti's traditional representation as a bust, only to abandon the objectivity prioritized by, let me see what this, oh, with the glasses on, is poised by evenly spaced sheets of bronze connected to suggest the form of the bust. Yet here, he has no face, only gaps where it should be, perhaps in effort to make space for all our ideas of her. Berlin bust artist, another one, on the other hand, converted ideas about Nefertiti into action. For in their 2016 work, The Other Nefertiti, the artists produced multiple 3D prints of the bust, performing an act of symbolic repatriation. These donated one of the replicas to the American University in Cairo and additionally shared the 3D printing data online. A search white rendering of the original. The pair's polymer resin bust completely straddles the line between blank and vacant. The Other Nefertiti is an unmarked canvas ready for her homecoming. Pushing back against Western claims on Nefertiti, African artists have been making their own arguments for the Queen's ethnic and national belonging. In 2018 solo exhibit, Nefertiti, at the Zumalek Art Gallery in Cairo, Egyptian artist Hamsam Danier debuted a series of oil paintings that returned the ancient monarch to Kemet and a symbol to her humanity. In his paintings, Nefertiti is pictured with legs, arms, and even wings, offering a rendering of Nefertiti as a divine leader who is both formidable and familiar. These paintings explode with color in modern and ancient fashion, off the shoulder tops, sweetheart dresses, and ankh necklaces that remake. Oh, wow. Yeah, I see that. Ankh necklaces that remake Nefertiti and her hallmark crown for a new world in this plaster bust. And she definitely looks different, I tell you. She definitely looks different. And a hallmark crown for a new world in this plaster bust used to be Nefertiti, and the French artist asserts a kind of intimacy between himself and the sovereign, casting his own face. So that's another one. But anyway, this idea that Nefertiti, that the bust of Nefertiti is real, and even though the features and so forth don't look African, and it was found in Germany, and it stayed there now. So, for all the lore that surrounds Nefertiti's image, very little is known about her life of the beautiful one. That's what she has been called, the beautiful one. You know, In fact, Nefertiti largely disappeared from the historical record by the 12th year of her husband's Akhenaten reign. When she was around 30 years old. Yet, in ancient Muse, her cultural potency is only enhanced by this mystique. Without it, she would not be fit for the artistic and political projection that remains fundamental to her posthumous reception. By inciting our engagement with the politics of race, gender, and colonial entitlement, Nefertiti has effectively surpassed the royal reach that once marked her dynasty. In exchange for this influence, she must remain a figurehead. Her 21st century fame marked by the disembodied power of a bust. Okay. Yeah. The disembodied. So, yeah. Brothers and sisters, you want to give us a call and talk about whatever you like to talk about? You can talk about what we just presented, or you can talk about whatever's on your mind. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. There's a few people on the queue. And of course, you hit star twice, and if you hit star twice, we can have some conversation. I hope that you would, you know. Yeah, hope that you would. But I don't know, you know. I tell you, as a seeker of truth, especially as it relates to African people, that's why, to me, anything that exposes Europeans for who and what they are should be done consistently. And I know that it's hard because we live here in America, which is controlled by Europeans, by Caucasians, by white people. And their whole thing is to support Caucasians globally. That's why you see all that constant news about Britain all the time. They're almost every day for decades, for years, probably since television was created. They had news about the relationship between United States and Britain, because Britain is a colony of the United States, in a colony of the Caribbean, a colony of damn near everywhere else. I have deep disdain for the British. I don't look at them with reverence. I don't look at them. I look at them for who and what they are. I look at their wealth has stolen. I look at the crown jewels. I look at that damn carriage of gold has stolen. I know that many people, because there's a lot of former, quote, British who live, colonies, the people who were colonized, who left their countries of India and other places, Africa, Kenya, Ghana, Nigeria, and live in Britain. I know, as my good friend has told me about the people who are being educated and trained not to do the bidding and the work that is necessary to make their countries rich and prosperous and technologically advanced. But no, to go to Europe to do that. The brain drain. And so, being that it is a fact, how can we encourage our people to understand the importance of sovereignty? Why is it a fringe? Why is it just a small number of us? Well, of course, you know the answer. If I control your thinking, I don't have to worry about your actions. If I render you an outcast, you will be an outcast. I control your thinking. I control what you see. I control how you behave. I dictate how you behave. You believe in what I say. You believe in what I want you to do. You follow these dictates. Only the brothers and sisters who have been able to liberate your mind, because it is about the mind. It is about the mind, brothers and sisters. And so, if you understand that, if you understand that, you will be able. You will be able. Hold on here. I know for many of us it's very hard to understand, especially for those of us who blame ourselves, don't understand the dynamics of what we've been through for these many hundreds of years. Some of us feel we should have our right mind, and we should. But if your right mind is not about trying to compete with Caucasians or get what they have or do what they have or live where they live, da, 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 da. If your right mind is, I want what I should have and I want it in the context of who I am, we've been made to be ashamed of who we are. We reject us being African. We believe that somehow that is what is not desired. That is what is hideous. That is what is ugly. Because we keep seeing it on TV, seeing it in documentaries, seeing it in movies. And what you continue to see, you internalize. And so we believe that we can't. That we can't do it. We're incapable. In Christian religion, which is a big crux of the problem for us, whether we understand it or not, it is. Christian religion does not speak to us as a collective people. Christian religion, particularly whatever denomination, it speaks to the individual and the will of the individual to accept Jesus Christ as your personal Savior. Once you've done that, then that's all you have to do. You've accepted Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, and now you can, you know, go on about your life. Because as bad as it may be, you will, you will be saved. And you just go on about your life, you will be saved. You know. And so no matter what happens, you know, if you want to join in this conversation, give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. For those who are in the queue already, hit star twice to join this conversation. Join this conversation. Hit star twice. We'd love to talk about whatever you want to talk about. If you want to talk about what I've been talking about, which of course is the fact that ancient Kemet, the noses have been shot off. You know, there's no record of Napoleon's men, but just what there is a record of when Napoleon came on to Kemet and he had commissioned those individuals to do a study. This is when Egyptology became a study. Egyptology, to study ancient, to look at the artwork, to look at the artifacts, to look at the metal nature, look at the culture and so forth, became a study. Because as ancient Kemetic society was declining for thousands of years, and then, of course, the Greeks taking over, the Ptolemies, and then the fall of the Ptolemies, and then Rome, and the fall of Rome, you know. And then when the Arabs came in, the Arabs had no, they had no respect. They had no knowledge of, they didn't give a rat's ass. They had an idea of who Islam is about, and they were going to push and promote that. And so the pyramids, there was no reverence for the pyramids. They took the limestone covering off of them to help build mosques and so forth. No, they could care less. They could care less. You know. And so there was no. And so if there were, they broke into tombs. And in fact, they broke into tombs and sold mummies to Europe, because Europeans were willing to pay for ground up mummies, since they supposedly had lasted and lived, you know, all this time, that if I drink, you know, seriously, you know, a mixture of this along with any other tea and so forth and some mummy in it, that I too will have immortality and live forever. Yeah, right. The incredible edible mummies. You know, I mean, this is real. This is what happened. This is real. This is what happened. And so they broke into tombs, and of course Howard Carter found in the Valley of the Kings and Queens Tutankhamun's tomb. And Howard Carter, 1922, became rich. Of course, Lord Carnarvon, who was part of that expedition who helped finance it, he died, and there was the so-called curse of the mummy. But supposedly he died because of malaria. Shit happens. Mummies, excuse me. But through all the artwork and all the artifacts and all those things that are in the British Museum, Louvre Museum, the Berlin Museum, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, whatever, all around the world. And, of course, the Cairo Museum. All that coming out of those tombs. And 646, good afternoon. 646, how you doing, Jay?
Yeah, what's happening, Oshi?
How are you?
You know, I just want to ask you this, brother, in all sincerity. I'm a lover of history. I appreciate the ancestors and all that they went through, all that they done, and this and that, that and this. But I really would just like to know, what the hell do Egypt got to do with our existence today and our everyday lives?
It's a good question.
When basically Egypt ain't even considered part of Africa in most people's eyes. The people don't look like most Africans, as people would say. I mean,
Today they don't. No. Today they don't, but the ancient they did. Yes.
Then my question would be, today, with all that we going through as a people, our lack of development and everything, what do it have to do with today when you can't even go there and be appreciated, respected, seen as indigenous or anything? It's basically, how could I say it, a front for maybe Islam and the Arabs.
Okay. And that's a good,
yeah. So it's not in total, I believe, African spirit. I mean, to me, it should always be appreciated, but it's irrelevant to me,
okay,
to be honest with
okay,
you.
Okay, let me, Jay, hold on.
Yeah. Existence.
Okay, let me just say this. The reason that ancient Kemet, and that's why the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations was created. That's why they had a pilgrimage of over 1,000 people in the 80s. I did not attend, but I know many people who did, who went to Kemet and returned to ancient Kemet, because to reclaim and recapture and restore that which was ours. It is not Arab. It is not the people that, as I mentioned earlier in my discussion, like Dr. Awas. Dr. Awas was, you probably seen him on, if you watch some documentaries on ancient Kemet or ancient Egypt, you probably noticed or seen Dr. Awas, and he has been pushing and promoting that ancient Kemet was not African, that it was a mixture of people. It was not African. And of course, that's not true. It was African. You know, it was African from the very beginning up until the time, I'd say, that when the Ptolemies came in, when the Greeks, or even before then, when the Hyksos, which were the Arab people, came in those invasions. But all invasions were not good. In fact, all invasions were disruptive. But the reason why, to me, that you look at ancient Kemet, because it was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high development. And you use it and look at it as a model. You don't say that I want to do that again. We don't need to build pyramids. We built them before. We did a damn good job. The hell, they still standing. They're the first great wonders of the world. The first. And the only one standing. All the other so-called seven wonders, they're all gone. But the pyramid, as the saying goes, you know, man fears time, but time fears the pyramids, because they've been standing perfectly since that time. And so, to me, what we look at in ancient Kemet is a model of what we have done. And if we have done it before, we can do it again. Once again, I ain't talking about building no damn pyramids. What I'm talking about is a model of cooperation and development that can build a society where we all can live and love freely in. And that's what I'm talking about. I ain't talking about no hierarchy of some damn pharaohs or kings and queens. I'm talking about a collectiveness of us saying, hey, we're pulling resources, we're going to do this, we're going to utilize resources, we're going to utilize the land, we're going to build in accordance with known practices to help one another, to move our people forward. We should never have a society based upon people at the top have every goddamn thing, while as you stratify downward to the bottom, which is the majority of the people, who ain't got nothing. No. But that's what this society is. And that's what European societies have modeled. And to me, it's just a matter of time. And people have been calling for their demise. I don't care when it happens. And I don't care if it happens, because we just need to get out of it. It is not ours. It's theirs. And as long as we're in it, the greater possibility that we will truly suffer from it. Because we always been suffering from it. Hell. Which we want to suffer even more because of its collapse? Or do we see it imminently happening and get our ass out?
Egypt's not going to restore our greatness, brother. It's never going to restore our greatness. The only thing that's going to restore our greatness is for us to stand up and collectively come together in the present and fight. Now, you can use the examples of the past to move us forward.
And that's what I'm talking about.
You have to deal with the present. But the reality is there's so many examples of our fight and our struggle and our past that should not even be centered around just Egypt. If I was to use an example of a real serious struggle and fight, I would use the example of the revolution in Haiti. What the Haitians was able to do. Those are the type of examples that we really need to use to get our minds right. No building of no pyramids and kings and queens and all that gonna get us a revolutionary spirit. How do building a pyramid get you the spirit of putting someone who's your enemy to death, brother? That don't make, you know, that's to be used after we gain our sovereignty. Then we look at that as a tool to build on technology and things of that nature. Nah, man, we got it backwards, bro.
Okay.
That's why we in the position we in.
No, Jay, I respectfully, once again, disagree. The point being is we're not looking to go back. We're looking at models. I agree with you. There are some more contemporary models to look at. But even looking at contemporary models, look at the impact and the failure. What really failed the Haitian Revolution, of course, was mulattoism. Those Negroes who still wanted to be with the French, because why? Of their hundreds of years of self-hatred, could not understand that regardless of whatever my skin tone is, regardless of whatever my hair texture is, regardless of whatever my facial feature, we are one. We are one African. And had they understood that, then you might say that it truly could be a model for us and not the situation that you see even
bro,
to this present day.
You can use that same example for those who sold us into slavery, bro. Come on.
Hold on, Jay. Because let me just say this. The number of people who have capitulated with us being enslaved or sold into slavery is so minimal. But yet we use that because the European has always wanted us to believe that our own people sold us into slavery. That they wanted us to believe that. And so what does that do? That furthers the self-hatred. I got some other callers here. Let me see if I can get some other callers in, Jay. You just hang on, okay, brother? All right.
You got it, my brother.
All right. 414. 414.
Hey, brother Oshi.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
All right, dear brother.
I think that Chester Williams did an excellent job, man. He dedicated his whole life to try to documenting and understanding what happened. And during that time period, how black people lost Kemet, there was a number of factors involved. At one time, the Sahara Desert was plush with greenery and lots of water and plants and vegetation and all of that. But so he talks about how the Maasai Nation, Europeans, gradually came in. At the same time, how the Sahara Desert began to form, and that drove a lot of black people south of the Sahara Desert. But even before that, the growth and development of Kush, Ghana, Songhai, Mali, and Kemet were coming from people who lived south of, you can't call it south of the Sahara Desert because it didn't exist at the time, but there were great caravans and we did a lot of stuff and that was the culmination of our greatness was in those areas in the north of Africa. So I think to understand what happened, we really need to understand what Chancellor Williams is talking about. But, hey, Oshi, I agree with you when you say if we did it before, we can do it again, and we can understand our greatness.
Right.
And I think one of the greatest symbols of our greatness is how the United States became a world power in less than 200 years. And they couldn't have not have done it if we without our help. That and that's what they don't want us to recognize. And other things like why they had to come up with the Emancipation Proclamation. We were some fighting mamma jammas. And so those are the things. There's a lot of things that if we look at it and start looking at it from our point of view, that we can see. There's, I mean, all through the time, our greatness, man. How black people went into Asia and spread African culture with them. They took what we did and they did it their way. So, but there are a lot. But the thing, but the, like you said, like Carter G said, our education has made our condition where we are now necessary because of what because we have accepted what the Europeans have been teaching. But there are a lot of black people of African descent who have went back and corrected a lot of that information. So if we just do our homework, we'll see how great we are and we'll know what we can do.
All right. Thank you, my brother. Appreciate that. 469, good afternoon.
Hey, Brother Oshie, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Rivera. How you doing, man?
Man, I cannot complain. And I'm doing just fine.
Right on.
It's important that we understand about chemistry because it gives us a sense of importance. And if it wasn't that important, remember that special they had when they had Richard Pryor that went into the tomb?
Yeah.
And when he started looking at all of those things,
yeah,
it woke him up.
Yeah.
And shortly thereafter now, remember, he stopped even using the term nigger.
Mm-hmm.
So the Greeks, the Europeans would never stop talking about Greece and their greatness. But the Greek society is no longer around here.
Mm-hmm.
But they still reference their greatness starting in Greece.
Right, because that's their beginning.
That's their reference point.
That's right. That's their origin.
So Kemet is basically a reference point.
Mm-hmm.
It's psychologically important because it will make you know, not think, know that you are great people and you have accomplished things that people today actually came to you to get the knowledge. So you're actually their teachers and not the other way around.
That's right.
And that is why it's important because we always, in the way that it's taught to us, it all started with Europeans. Because, you know, Africans were backwards. They ran around with bones in their noses and making savages eating one another. And so it dispels all that. And that's why it's important.
Yep, I agree. All right, my brother. All right. Appreciate it. Hang on.
Bye-bye.
All right. All right, Jay?
Yeah, bro.
All right. So.
Listen, the bottom line is history is history.
Mm-hmm.
History should be always used for an example of what has happened and how we move forward. But at this present time and stage in our development, we have to come up with something new, bro, to get out of this quagmire that we in.
Okay.
You know, unfortunately, we as a people are not doing the necessary things to move forward because of the great trickery of this white man and how he's been able to capture our minds.
Right.
To make us think and feel that it's more important to integrate with him than to separate and develop ourselves and create for ourselves. Other ethnic groups, that's what they do.
Well, you know what? You know, Jay, the problem with you, you're right, and because the problem is this, is we've been trained to believe that we were slaves. My good brother LaRue's on the line, and who wrote the book, Why We Should Not Call Our Ancestors Slaves. We've been trained, and many of us still believe that to this day. You know, we've been trained to believe in a theology, a Christian theology, which does not promote us being collective, but promote the idea that you are an individual. It is your personal salvation. So we have these things that are hindrance to us, that prevents us from coming together, pulling our resources to trust one another, believe in one another, respect one another, to help us grow together as a people. And also, too, we believe in this madness. We believe in America. We believe it's just as much our right as it is the Caucasian. But the Caucasian runs this. This is his, not ours. And yet we keep fighting to make this man accept us. And it's never going to happen. It never happens. It never will happen. Brother LaRue, you got something to say, man?
I think it's important for us to understand, though, because people don't, we talk about a lot of people, but we don't talk about Carter G. Woodson very much. And I love his book, man. There's a guy on YouTube that thought so much of it that he read the whole book on YouTube.
Right on. Right on.
Anyway.
The miseducation of Negroes is important.
You know, the purpose of history, first of all, nobody tells a history that doesn't boost their self-esteem and their ego.
Right.
Everybody tells
one. Exactly, Jay. You're right, Jay. They ain't supposed to. If it's my story, believe me, I'm going to embellish it. I'm going to have hyperbole. It's my story.
See, the thing is, you always supposed to promote and prop yourself up. You're never supposed to prop no white man up about a damn thing. Because the fact of the matter is, our biggest mistake is, like you always say, we don't know history. Mm-hmm. Because if you really knew history, understood history, and knew the relationship between us and Africans and the white man, it's just something that most Negroes can't psychologically accept or understand. If the truth be told,
well, we believe it from Europeans.
Superior to a white man, and then to have the white man do what he's done to us, and we basically punk out in our resistance, it just does something to the average person psychologically. He never feels as though he could defeat the white man.
No, because Jay, we believe in his story. He has bombarded. Oh, this is very much so true. He has bombarded us 24/7, 365 with the images and notions of who we are not. The images and notions of our inferiority.
Why mean you don't believe in this story?
Because
I mean, you don't believe in this story because we've done enough reading of history.
But that's not the majority of us.
Necessary thing. But you got black people who know information and they still don't want to deal with it. I'll give you a prime example. Negroes that's on television today.
Yes.
The Joy Reid.
Yes.
The courses and all of them.
All of them.
So how do you justify them? Are they scared? What are they? I really would like to know because there's so many of our
they're
children
black.
Looking up to them.
They're black. That's who they are. That's who they are. They're black. They're not African. And they don't want to be African. Nah. They're black. See? They want what the Caucasian has. They want to live in his neighborhood. They want to go to schools that he goes to. They want to be just like the Caucasian, but not white. They want to be black, just like Stephen A. Smith, just like what's his name? Man, his name is escaping. But anyway, that's the idea. Listen, I gotta go. I gotta run. I appreciate that. Hotep J. Hope to see you guys on Wednesday, okay? Brother LaRue, thank you. Brother Kevin, all y'all, respect. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure the hell damn it don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed day. Be safe. See you on Wednesday. Peace, family.